hello to all those who are listening and viewing. My name is Jordan Willman, and I'm doing this for my speech class and business presentation, and I'm very excited to have Christine and Mr. C from Side Podcast, Formula One podcast and website. So how are you guys doing today?
Very, very good.
I am good. I'm liking this call already. Hello, Jordan.
Oh, well, hello. So I'm very appreciative to have both of these on. Compared to all your other interviews, mine are from the UK, so I think I have perks on that right now. So I'm going to start off right into it right now. My first question is, Side Podcast came to life in the fall of 2006 and early 2007. So what made you decide to make a Formula One podcast and website altogether?
Well, this is something that actually we've started disagreeing on, because I say... I say that we wanted a project to do together, and Formula One was the thing that we thought we had in common at the time, the biggest thing that we could find to talk about together and spend some time together doing that, because we spent a lot of time at our respective desks facing away from each other, and this way we could actually talk to each other.
I do agree with that, but I also think there was more to it, because prior to Side Podcast, you had begun recording audiobooks for a website called
LibriVox.
That's the name. Sorry, the name escaped me for a moment there. And I thought it was a fad that would go away quickly. I remember you bought a microphone and you bought an audio setup, and you were keen, and you started recording all of these audiobooks, and I thought that's never going to last.
I do get bored of hobbies.
But for some reason you stuck at it and you enjoyed it. And I thought, damn, she's really good at this talking out loud business. And I thought more people should hear what you were doing. And because podcasting is it's hard to do by yourself, I sort of nominated myself to be the person who you got to speak to. And that's sort of, in my mind, how things got started. You were very good at talking and expressing information.
Reading
and
out
opinions.
Loud, basically.
Yeah, and I was basically the person who was just there to answer you back and to disagree with you.
I mean, the one thing I love about you guys, especially compared to other podcasts, really just in general, is the chemistry that you two have. And I just find it hilarious, and it's very informative. So I really appreciate that. So, Christine, I did a little info. You started watching Formula One in 2003, as did I. So what made you decide to start watching? And Mr. C, it'll be the same question for you after. Why and when?
Well, 2003 is the best year, obviously.
Thank you. Yes.
I started watching mostly because I started hanging out with that Mr. C, and he watched all the time. And so when it was on the TV, I would watch. And I was that annoying girlfriend that asked question after question. Who is that? What are they doing? Why are they doing that? Have they won? I don't understand. And eventually, some of the knowledge started to sink in. And then I started to like it myself rather than just because it was on the TV.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. And Mr. C, for yourself?
I can't give a specific time, date, or year because I was very young. But I do recall sitting on a wooden bench in a pub when I was...
Too young to be in a pub?
Well, yeah, too young to drink alcohol in a pub, certainly. But I wasn't too young to be sitting in there. I was very young. I don't know exactly what age I was. But it was Mansell versus... PK versus Senna and Prost. It was Formula One's big headline time. It was when it was in the news and when it was all, it was the superstar era. It was on every Sunday, and the people, if it was raining outside and you couldn't go play on the swings or whatever, you were stuck inside effectively. And everybody in this pub would watch this tiny, very small I think it must have been colour. It must have been colour television. It wasn't that old.
How old are you?
But it was very, very small cars, limited coverage. It was on the BBC, but normally wasn't a whole race. It was they cut to it and from it and mixed it with other sports. Looking at the coverage, looking back on that coverage, I'm amazed that anybody could get into Formula One at that time. But that's when I started watching, and I sort of just kept it up. I dropped in and out occasionally. The Michael Schumacher era stressed me out somewhat, so I stopped watching for periods during that domination. But other than that, it's been pretty a consistent thing in my life.
Awesome. So I'm kind of going to flip-flop between Side Podcast questions and regular Formula One questions. So along with it, since we're already on the topic, what is both of your favorite Formula One seasons? Why?
Mine is 2008, because it was epic. We went to races that year, and the championship showdown at the end was brilliant. And it was just a great year, especially coming off the back of what was a difficult year in 2007 with all the arguments and controversies there. I thought that 2008 rocked, basically.
I think, without checking my facts, it was 2005 was the best year in Formula One ever. That was the time that the Schumacher domination was broken, and it was broken by two drivers. It was Fernando Alonso in a reasonably fast Renault and Kimi Raikkonen in a super fast but ultimately unreliable McLaren, and those two going at it, but ultimately deposing Michael Schumacher, I think, was the best season in Formula One, hands down. I defy anybody to argue with that, even Christine.
I'd agree with that, although Kimi came up short, in my opinion, should have won it in 2003, but hey, I'm biased. So I'm going to move on, because in 2007, you guys came up with the F1 Minute 60-second audio podcast, which I thought was great, and it was so unique because I don't think anyone's really ever done something like that. So what came up with the idea to do like a daily podcast just for 60 seconds?
That's a great question.
Because you can't remember?
No, I can't.
You genuinely can't remember. Do you not even remember the day you came up with the title?
I worked hard on these.
You tell me that I came up with the title, but I do not recall.
I could tell you the exact corner on the exact street we were standing when because obviously F1 Minute is a play on words, and it was, you came up with this title and you didn't realize it was such a clever twist, F1 1 Minute on that play on words, but yeah, it popped out of your head just as a random title for a show, and it floored me, and you didn't even know what you'd said.
No, lots of people since it launched, they had that eureka moment, oh, it's F1 and 1 minute, that's genius, and we've never judged them for that, because even when I first came up with it, I didn't know.
And so the thing with creating anything, it's coming up with a title is one of the hardest things. You came up with the title Side Podcast, another stroke of genius.
I remember that one.
And then you came up with, you were talking about doing a short show, and you came up with the title F1 Minute, and the title was so good, like a slam dunk, wasn't it, in terms of titles. You had to build a show around that, and I think it was one of those things when the name was so good, the rest fell into place. And once it's called 1 minute, there's your start and your finish point, and then it's just a question of, I guess, how often you do it and you know what you cover when you cover it.
I do remember specifically that when we were floating the idea of it being a 1 minute show, or sticking religiously to that 1 minute, because I was really annoyed at another podcast I was listening to that called itself a minute long show and was 1 minute 27 sometimes and 1 minute 16 the next time. So I said, no, this is going to be 60 seconds every day. If it has to be every day, that's fine, but it's 60 seconds and that is it. No arguments. And I think every single episode, and it's over 1,000 episodes now, I think every single one has been 60 seconds, no question.
You have changed the concept of the things you cover and how you cover them, because previously when it initially started, it was a roundup of all of the day's news, and now it's more a roundup of a specific news story when that story breaks.
Yes, it was a daily thing, rounding up everything that had happened that day or the previous day, and then since then it has evolved, and it isn't every day because there just isn't news every day and I don't want to force it.
Yeah, I was going to get into that, because it was probably tough in the beginning when there's days where there's really not much to talk about and you're going to kind of go about something totally different.
Yeah, and I think it started out a little bit more opinionated, and there's nothing wrong with that, but because we have Side Podcast to do the opinions, we sort of thought that F1 Minute should be more factual. It is the news roundup.
Right, definitely. So then my next question is, in 2009, earlier so, you guys were nominated in two categories of the 2008 Weblog Awards. What was that like personally, and for the podcast and website's sake?
I'm looking at Christine, who doesn't look like she remembers this either. Your memory's terrible, do you know?
Like I said,
I like questions where that we've done some research here, it's clear. I don't know that. It's always an honour to be nominated, that's what people say, and that is nice. But I don't think awards and things like that get us that excited.
It depends. There were a couple, when we first started, we were up for a couple of awards with a couple of sites, and I forget exactly which was the main one that blew our socks off. But there was a point when we genuinely didn't consider ourselves mainstream or big enough to be recognized by anybody. And we'd popped up on some award. And
when you're in categories with like Five Lives, the BBC, and other mainstream people like that.
We popped up on whatever award it was, and we were shortlisted for the final category. And then we were amongst the most insane group of names, like major podcasters, major broadcasters, big name people, and also side podcasts. and we couldn't figure out, I think it may have been like best community or one of those categories. And we were just like, there is no way we deserve to be here. But it, you know, it obviously made our day, made our week, however long it went on for. So I would agree with Christine and say that awards generally, you know, they don't mean that much, and people, you know, you get nominated for them and sometimes you do well and sometimes you don't. But when we were very, very small, when we were just beginning, and we didn't even rate ourselves, you know, at all, didn't give ourselves any credit for anything. To have that kind of recognition was actually a bit special. I wish I remembered the name of it, but one award definitely sticks in my mind.
It sticks in your mind, except it doesn't really.
More than it does yours.
So also in 2009, you guys came up with probably my favorite series, An Aside with Joe. So how did this series get underway? How were you able to get an F1 journalist like Joe to come on and interview basically, I would say, on a monthly basis?
Joe actually contacted us. He had seen that podcasting was growing and it was a good way to reach out to fans and get information out there. And obviously he has plenty of other works that he can talk about. I'm not saying he just does it for a plug, but, you know, every outlet helps. So, yes, he came to us. Obviously, he'd liked what he'd seen. And, yeah, we were very happy to talk to him, very honoured. And it's been a real success on both sides, I would say. And, yeah, we love it. I mean, I don't get to talk to him as much as I would like because it's always at weird times because we have to catch up with him wherever he is across the globe. But Mr. C has kept on regular contact with him.
I think we have spoken to a number of key people in Formula One, but we're not the kind of people who would hassle anybody, call people up, cold call people and say, do you want to come on our show? That's not the thing we've ever done. And I don't think we've ever had to call up Joe and say, you haven't spoken to us in a while, just want to come on and have a discussion. We're very laid back about when we find time to discuss Formula One. And usually it's when Joe's got a minute, when he's got something on his mind, when he's got some free time, he'll send us an email and say, listen, do you want to talk about this? You got time to talk about this? And then we'll make some time for it. And we've always got time for Joe because it's such fantastic insight. You know, he's there, he's on the ground. He meets all the people we see on TV. You know, that's his world. You know, to us, it's motorsport through a window in your living room, but to Joe, right, that's his life. And it's just gives us such an insight. And times when I've been down and depressed about the sport and thinking, you know, Formula One, oh, why am I watching Formula One, really? And then you talk to Joe and he'll just say, well, you know, you're looking at it all wrong. It's not like this. You think it's depressing and it's bad news. And you think, you know, there was a breakaway discussion of a breakaway series. And it was like, oh, this is such a terrible idea. And then there'll be someone else, you know, something else going wrong in the sport. And you're thinking, oh, my goodness me, this is awful. And then Joe will come along and go, no, this is, you misunderstand. It's like this and it's like this and it's like that. And you're like, you can start a conversation in one place. But when you finish the conversation, you know, it's the entire argument and the entire conversation has been turned upside down. And that's why I like talking to Joe.
It's really interesting that it is such an enjoyable show to do because we watch a race or read all the news, come up with the questions and have our opinions about it. And then you talk to Joe and he just says, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. This is how it is. And it's still brilliant. It's really great fun, even though clearly we don't know anything.
It is. Yeah. I mean, as Kristen said, I have no idea why Joe decided to talk to us. I think, actually, one thing we're very good at is audio quality. That's one thing. I mean, we waffle on about Formula One all day, every day, but without, you know, we don't know that much. We're not in the heart of the action. We're only observers looking through the looking glass. But we do put a lot of effort into production quality. We spend a lot of money on microphones and audio equipment and things like that. So I think I get the impression that Joe picked up on the fact that it sounded The things we were doing sounded really good.
Even if we don't know what we're
even if we didn't
about.
Really know what we were talking about. And he thought he could contribute to that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess like you guys said, I love how he kind of flips it on its side and says, has his own opinion about it. Because like you mentioned, he's the one who's actually there and sees everything. So that's what I love about the interviews in particular. So I guess my next question will be, with 2014, it's been gone on about the last 2 years about all these new regulation changes, such as the engines going to V6 turbos and everything like that. How do you think the sport will be affected, either in a positive or negative way?
I think over this year, it can only be a positive thing, because knowing that everyone is just waiting, there's some development happening, but nothing major. I think that can only be a good thing. And we've had quite stable regulations for a while now, and it's about time they flipped it all around and made something exciting happen.
Engine homologation has been the bane of my Formula One enjoyment for the last several years. I understand why Formula One engine costs needed to be frozen, but the way it was done meant that certain manufacturers were stuck with they were unable to develop themselves out of the spot they found themselves in. And I think Honda were a manufacturer who had an underpowered engine that was homologated in a fashion that they were stuck with it. They could never claw that pace back via any other means. And I think you saw when they left the sport and they put a Mercedes engine into the Honda chassis, it went like wildfire, because suddenly, you know, it had a new lease of life. And so you have this problem whereby you make this fixed regulation that says no more changes will be made, no more investment will be made in this area. And that's not really why the thing I like about Formula One. I like the constant development, the continual improvements. And homologation is the exact opposite of that. And so in 2014, the regulations are going to be freed. It's going to be opened up. New manufacturers hopefully will come in. And that will, it will then give Formula One a new lease of life, I think.
Well, it's like this era, we know that Red Bull have it down. They know what they're doing. They can win with their eyes closed. So it's about time that something changed to let someone else have a go.
Definitely. And as you mentioned before, do you think that next year we'll see an open for different manufacturers, like BMW or Honda, for instance, that could possibly come back?
Well, there's all the talk that Honda are coming back in with McLaren. It's not in 2014, is it? The next year, possibly?
2015.
And I do think that other manufacturers that have left, Toyota and BMW, will start looking at the sport again and will probably come back again. I mean, even Renault, who are sort of in it but aren't really, they might want to come back and get more involved again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my little gripe is more the engine manufacturers, because it seems like we just have a grid full of Renaults and a few Ferraris and a few McLarens, and I think
that is exactly what we have.
Yeah,
and it takes away from, to me, what I've always thought what Formula One is, and it comes down to the different engine manufacturers. So I guess my next question is, at some point, this man, Bernie, will be gone, long gone. Who will take over? I mean, I'd love it for me to be the guy, but who will be that person that'll take over? Will it be some younger blood that'll put sport into a different direction?
Well, it has to be someone younger, because I'm not sure there's anyone on the planet older than Bernie. If he does ever disappear from Formula One, I guess it will be some kind of corporation that have taken over, and a younger person will front it, and hopefully they will understand that there are fans who would like access to this sport, that the internet exists, and that you can't just make money all the time. Sometimes there has to be a compromise.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I with all the money Formula One makes, I think they've really, I think, screwed the fans over the last number of years, because there's so much that they could do and so much options they could put out, but they just don't. So I guess it goes to a different question, a bit about this year. After watching the Malaysian Grand Prix, are we still in the Sebastian Vettel era? Because I really hope not. I really hope it's ending.
Firstly, you're wrong, because it's not the Sebastian Vettel era. It's the Adrian Newey Mark III era. That's the key thing. Vettel is good. Now, you know, you don't get three world championships by being average, but he's not that good. I don't believe he's like Michael Schumacher levels of what would you call it, like calculated dominance. But Adrian Newey has absolutely made the very best of the current regulations. He's eked every single tiny amount of performance out of any bit of leeway he's given. And there's more than him at Red Bull, but essentially it's led by him. And Sebastian Vettel has been the main benefactor of that. I mean, Mark Webber's done quite well out of it too. You know, he's done far better than he rightly should have done given his levels of ability in any other car. I can't imagine ever seeing Mark Webber on a podium. I'm stunned that he's been up there as often as he has done. But so really it's not the Sebastian Vettel era. It's the Adrian Newey again era.
But if it is the Sebastian Vettel era, and if it does continue this year, which it very well could do because he has been still supreme on Saturdays, and it hasn't always worked out his way, although sometimes he makes it work his way. He's shown a bit of weakness so far, so early in this season. But even if he does win this year, like we said before, it's all change next year, so it's worth sticking with it through another Sebastian Vettel season just to see what happens in 2014.
Especially as there's bad blood of sorts between Red Bull and their engine partner Renault, because Red Bull are keen to promote Infiniti, who are taking branding or promotional rights away from Renault. And you wouldn't know that Renault had just won three back-to-back championships, because Red Bull / Infiniti have won them. They were powered by Renault, but Renault don't get a look in, or haven't had the look in that they deserve, perhaps. And so when the engine regulations change, you might find that another team steps into the limelight. I mean, I'd love to see it, Williams, and the Williams-Renault partnership bear more fruit than it has done thus far. And for them to be the number one Renault team going forward. And if that happens, if they become the key partners, then you might find Red Bull drop down the order pretty swiftly.
Well, they don't get any of the praise with Red Bull, and they get all the criticism for all those failures they had last year. Alternator failures.
Yes, they did. It was all the alternator failures were all Renault's fault, apparently. And so, yeah, they it's not been a fruitful partnership for the French. I defy anyone to appreciate the work that Renault have put into making that Red Bull a world championship winning chassis.
This next question kind of goes along with it. Do you think the only people that can actually stop Red Bull from winning the championship this year is Red Bull themselves, i.e. Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber? Because I feel that's really the way that they can lose it.
Well, they do seem to have a little bit more competition, although we've only seen two races and they have been two quite unusual weekends. Mercedes are right up there, and Ferrari still up there as well. McLaren have a lot of work to do. But it could be that Red Bull completely self-destruct and just do themselves out of another championship. That would be really interesting to watch.
At this point, my money is on Ferrari, because you've got Fernando Alonso, who's now come so close 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row, however many times he's been right up there. The Italians have finally figured out how to make a fast car from the start of the season, so they're not playing catch-up as they have had to in previous seasons. And you've got Felipe Massa, who's back on form, and thus far out qualifying his arguably better teammate. That's the best lineup in Formula One right now. Felipe Massa, Fernando Alonso, that Ferrari is a fine, fine machine. They made a huge mistake in Malaysia, a massive own goal it scored with Fernando Alonso's front wing eating itself and sending him flying off the track. They should have brought him in, arguably, when they had the chance. Also, perhaps he could have been less eager going into the second or third corners and not damaged his front wing in the first place. That would have made a big difference. But if you disregard that, I think they will actually be the team that everybody will want to beat before the end of this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think they have, in my opinion, one of the best cars out there and drivers in Fernando Alonso, but I just think they're going to keep shooting themselves in the foot. And then they, like you mentioned before in your last podcast, they lose the championship by a point and everyone's crying and upset. Well, it's these moments right here that cause it from not winning the championship. So my next question actually goes out against Mercedes and McLaren Mercedes. I know there's been a lot of talk, oh, McLaren's going to come back strong, but some part of me thinks that Mercedes might have the upper hand all season with their driver lineup. Do you agree that Mercedes will probably be better than McLaren throughout this entire year?
I think they're going to have the upper hand for a good proportion of the season. I think it will get a lot closer towards the end of the year. But if they get a good start and keep on rolling, get the momentum going now, and keep Hamilton's confidence up, then yeah, they could outperform McLaren for the full season.
I don't know.
Speechless. This almost never happens.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that Mercedes are outperforming their own car. The drivers are doing a better job than I think anybody, including their own team boss, expected them to do. And they may have been flattered by the missteps from other teams in the first two races. If they drop down to the midfield at the next race and stay there, I don't think I'll be surprised, actually. They haven't had a great season since they were called Braun. There's no reason to think that the changes they've made over the winter have had any chance to really settle and make any difference. So they're where they are, largely because last year's car was a pain in the backside to manage with its ridiculously complicated front DRS and rear DRS. It was almost impossible to balance. The rules forced them, thankfully, to ditch that idea. So they've kind of been boxed into their own success. Given enough rope, they would have probably hung themselves again this year. I don't think they will. I think McLaren will come back, and I think they will get the better of Mercedes.
But I think that goes along with it too is the driver lineups. And I mean, who would you rather have, Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg, or on the other side, Jenson Button and Sergio Perez? I mean, to me, I like Perez. I think he's a great young driver, but I still don't think that he's there yet. And I don't know. I think the more experienced driver lineup in Hamilton and Rosberg may pay off. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that Button has more potential to get wins if they can get the car up to scratch. But like you say, that's just one half of the team, and Perez is, he's got a lot of work to do. Mercedes, that is two good drivers, one exceptional driver, one also quite good driver. But it's just whether they can keep the car up there to get the wins that they need.
I think this year could be the making of Nico Rosberg. If he can stay as close to Lewis Hamilton the remainder of this season, wherever the car is, it doesn't matter whether the car's midfield, rear of the field, whatever, as long as Nico Rosberg shadows Lewis Hamilton throughout every single race this year, it will be the making of that guy's reputation, because he's such a hard driver to judge in terms of outright pace and performance. And you're never really sure when he was partnered with Schumacher whether or not Schumacher was just past it, or whether actually Schumacher was right on the money and Nico Rosberg is just better than everybody is giving him credit for.
I think we were quite sure about that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I guess one of the other questions I have is that I think Formula One the last few years has gone in a direction where, to me, it's gone away from classic circuits. And I mean, I guess it's fine. The world's a huge oyster, so you want to explore different places. But do you think that Formula One should kind of get back into, I don't know how to say this in a proper term, but back to like, quote unquote, the classic races? Like, I really wish Formula One would go back to Austria. I wish they went to Hockenheim every year, not just do this back and forth thing with the Nürburgring, because I think that track's absolute rubbish and it's not fun to watch race around there. Would you prefer that, or do you like the different, you know, going to the Middle East in different races, or Korea, for example? That's, you know, something that it's going to be gone after, what, the 2014 season?
It's a tricky thing to define, because we had the US Grand Prix was brand new, and it was brilliant, a new race, and it was fantastic and a great event and fun for everyone. But then we've also had recent introductions in India and Korea, and they've been quite muted, not necessarily what you would want for Formula One. So I think there is a balance to be had with old and new, but you have to make sure you've got the right location and the right circuit design. But then also, if you stick with all the old tracks, they're all in the middle of nowhere and starting to get very run down. So I think there is some work on infrastructure to be done if you want to keep the classic circuits, keep them in the calendar, because this is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport, and some of them look a bit crumbly.
Brazil, perhaps. I would actually say, just going back to your original question, I would be amazed if Korea was on the calendar this year, given political events that are unfolding there right now.
Oh, really?
Like, I don't know whether it would be safe for Formula One teams to head out that way. By the time it's
a while away yet.
It is a while away, but you know, there's a lot can change in that time. So we'll have to see whether or not it vanishes earlier than that, especially given it's a circuit that nobody has any interest in actually going to, which might, you know, that might sway people one way or another. But I agree with Christine entirely. I can't argue with that logic. The only thing to really add to that is that Formula One is an expensive right now. The way the political structure and the financial structure of the sport is, it's an expensive event to hold in your country, and it doesn't matter if we want the classic circuits to come back or not. They just simply cannot. They can't afford to do that. Austria could come back if the guy who owns Red Bull decides that he wants it to. I mean, he could afford to bring the A1 ring back. I mean, he owns it now.
It is the Red Bull ring.
I mean, that can actually happen.
But what if Red Bull won at the Red Bull ring? That would be a fix.
What if they did? Well, what if they didn't? That would be embarrassing.
That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, what you need is people with deep pockets and a passion for Formula One to invest in these old, creaky circuits. They need investment. In the case of things like Silverstone, they're not able to get government investment. Okay. And therefore, the larger, you know, the countries that are able to do that, or are able to raise the political clout and the money required, they're always going to be at the front of the list, at the head of the list.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I don't know, some of the new tracks, like, nothing against India, but oh my god, watching cars race around there is like, I'd rather sort out my sock drawer kind of thing. So, my next question, a couple more left. Pretty basic one. Favorite all-time Formula One driver and why?
Well, that's easy for me. My favorite all-time Formula One driver is Frank Montagny, because he's amazing. And okay, he only raced in maybe two or three races, but he was brilliant.
You didn't like Frank Montagny when he was driving in Formula One, though. You subsequently discovered Frank Montagny when he was a test driver for Toyota.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And I was very upset when they booted him out. Now, my feelings towards Formula One drivers change on a daily basis. I just really love the human side of it. I love seeing how they react to situations and the stories that unfold around them. I can't say that I've ever really had an all-time favourite, except for Frank. But at the moment, I'm quite partial to Grosjean and Vandegaard. But
yeah, that could change tomorrow. Yeah, you love the French drivers, that's for sure.
Yeah, I am partial to French. But Vandegaard is Dutch, so, you know, things could be on the move.
We should we should give Grosjean a bit more credit than just being French, actually. Because when
he's
not
actually French, he's Swiss.
Well, okay, yeah, there is that too. Point taken. But if you go back to the questions you were asking us at the beginning of this recording, when we were very small and starting out, Romain Grosjean was the first driver to ever acknowledge Side Podcast. I think he might have been the first driver to follow us on Twitter.
What?
And there was a big, big kerfuffle in the Side Podcast community. We got very excited about that. And that was before he super subbed for Nelson Piquet. He was following Side Podcast. I don't know if he was a listener or if he just liked the site or what the deal was. There wasn't very many people who followed him. We were one of those people. And then he became a driver.
And he unfollowed us.
I don't know if he still follows us or what happened there, but definitely he was, when we were nobodies and you know, we're still nobodies, but when, you know, even at a time when he shouldn't have heard of Side Podcast and shouldn't have been listening to us, he did. So, you know, credit to him for that. So he's probably my favourite too.
Not really, though. Who is your favourite all time? You said that you watched around the Mansell era. Didn't you quite like him and Damon Hill and all that lot?
Oh, my goodness me. I would suggest, actually, off the top of my head, Mika Häkkinen would be up there. I'd have to give this some more thought. But right now, without having a list of every driver that I've seen race in front of me, and I may have omitted somebody, but Mika was always an exciting driver to watch. And he's one of those drivers that seem to become nicer and funnier and more interesting after he quit Formula One. And it's always exciting to see him on the coverage and to spot him in the garage and have him back in Formula One whenever he drops by. And I just think he's a good ambassador for the sport. It was always, you know, when he was always driving on the limit. I think when he came into Formula One, he was quite erratic. And maybe not somebody who you'd pick out as a future world champion. But, you know, the infamous pass on Schumacher at...
Spa.
Spa, yes, that's the one. That's no question the best overtake in Formula One ever. And that was Mika, and that was the guy, you know, that's the kind of guy he was.
He also made a guest appearance in McLaren's Tooned cartoon series.
So. Again, yeah, he after Formula One, I don't recall him being that
fun,
humorous, whilst he was driving, but afterwards he seems to have mellowed a lot and he seems like an all-round good guy.
On the other side of it, any drivers that you just really could care less for, didn't like for some reason, you're just like, I don't like that guy, just for no particular reason, I just can't stand him.
Yes, many. As I said, my feelings towards drivers change all the time. I have been known not to like Pastor Maldonado. When Lewis Hamilton first joined the sport, I was very critical about him. I've mellowed on that front a bit. We specifically said we started podcasting just because Michael Schumacher quit the sport and we were not very happy when he returned. I think at the moment it's Pastor Maldonado that does it for me. And aside from the fact that he crashes a lot, there is just a feeling I get from him that it's not right.
I agree. No, totally. I just, he irks me in a certain way, but
I have a vague recollection actually that the first driver that we very much disliked when we began Side Podcast was Giancarlo Fisichella.
Oh yes,
but I forget exactly why that was.
He started a driver academy and said that he would be very happy for his son to go there, but not his daughter.
Oh yes, no women drivers. He was strongly against female racing drivers. Correct. Yes,
thanks for reminding me of that.
That was the very first driver who annoyed us, and I think we might have met him or saw him at Goodwood one year, and he was properly grumpy.
Yeah,
wasn't interested in speaking to anybody, signing anything, acknowledging any of the fans' existence. Every opportunity he had, he would put his helmet on, sit in the car. I think he did more runs at Goodwood than any other driver ever did on a single day, because he just didn't want to get out the car and talk or interact or speak or do anything, you know, remotely interesting. So Fisichella would be up there as somebody who was who didn't live up to maybe expectations on meeting him.
Yeah, I guess being outpaced by Fernando at 05 and 06 probably doesn't help anyway. So I'll go to my last question then. So you guys were in charge of Formula One. What are three things that you would do to either change, alter, or make the sport different in a better way?
Oh, that's a great question. The first thing I would do is make the calendar slightly shorter, just a few less races, and spread it out more evenly, because I cannot stand this back to back and then 3 weeks off, back to back, 3 weeks off. It does my head in. So that is one thing I would do, is tweak the calendar to be more to my liking.
Consistent.
Yes.
Every other Sunday.
Yep. Fortnightly would be good. What else would I do? I think definitely ticket prices and entertainment at the track. We've really enjoyed what Singapore have been doing with putting on music, and it seems like one massive party there, and you get a lot for your money. So if you're paying a lot of entry fees, you get good entertainment when you go there, whether it's on track or not. And then something we've picked up on recently is the lack of effort. That's not the right word, but how drivers tend to sit in the garage for extended periods on Fridays and Saturdays when there are fans in the grandstands waiting for them. So I don't know how I would do it, but if I could fix that, I definitely would.
I agree with those. Can I have three more? Or is that our three taken?
No, for sure.
Coverage, absolutely, 100%, needs an entire ground-up rethink. From the way it's distributed to the way it's restricted, pulling tiny and almost unwatchable fan videos from YouTube makes no sense in this day and age. And why Formula One management insist on stripping every single piece of footage from video sharing sites is completely beyond me. It's totally out of it's just totally unnecessary, and it doesn't help sell the sport to fans. It makes it harder for the fans to watch, and harder for the fans to enjoy. So I would start with an entire ground up rethink of everything to do with any kind of video coverage, at all, from the paddock to the races to distribution, end to end rethink. It's all wrong. I would change everything about it. There's nothing good to say about the current Formula One broadcast situation.
The new guy that replaces Bernie, he'll sort that out.
Yes, I hope so. Going back to that question, I don't think it will be one person. I think it has to be a board of several people.
Almost be better if it was a board of people, yeah, actually.
It needs to be a group of maybe a dozen sensible people without wanting to say anything libelous. It makes no sense to run an organization with one figurehead in this day and age, I don't think. And that's somewhere else that Formula One is behind. So I'll have that as my second thing then. I'll entirely revamp the coverage. I'll get rid of the current management structure and replace it with something far more sensible. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, what else would... I think one thing, it's got to be... I would...
Free ice cream for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
I would bring back in season testing. Ooh. Because I like development races and I don't care how much it costs.
I'd agree with that a lot, yeah. I think I actually kind of miss that aspect of it. Instead of cramming it into practice sessions, I don't really... My opinion, though. Mm. Hey, that's me. All right, so those are my questions, and I'd like to thank you guys very much for doing this in the late evening in the UK. I really appreciate it. Do you guys have any last final comments or questions for me?
I'll tell you what, I do, actually, because you have been a huge contributor to SciPodcast in terms of the community, in terms of voicemails, and comments, live events, those kind of things. What is it that you latch onto most about SciPodcast? What is it we do well that makes you keep coming back, and what is it we do badly that we should do better in the future?
Well, the one thing I love about your guys' podcast and website, compared to really anything, doesn't really matter what genre it is that it's a community feel, and I love that aspect. Like, when you guys came out this year, you're like, okay, if you guys want podcasts, you guys want to be involved, you have to contribute. And I think that's perfect. It has to go both ways between your listeners and to those who are making any kind of content. Doesn't matter what it is. And I think that's what a lot of podcasts or websites, I think, lack, really in any genre, not just Formula One, is that you got to have that community feel, but you got to have a bounce back, because it doesn't matter whatever relationship in life, it has to go both ways. And you want your listeners to be involved just as much as you guys are involved. So that's what I love about it. How you make it open, whoever wants to be involved or any questions or points, you guys are always open to asking, or, you know, will answer. And that's what I really love about this site in particular compared to really anything. And that's what I love about your guys' site. Anything to improve on? I don't know. That's a toughie, because I really appreciate, and I know from my experience when I did Formula Pod for 2 years there, it takes a lot of time. And I don't think your listeners maybe all that realize that it takes time to get together a podcast, update a site. And I don't know, I don't really have any gripes towards you guys. I mean, you guys do a great job. You take time out right now on a Saturday night to talk to me when you could be out at the pub right now. So, I think I just love the community feel about this website and podcast. That's what I love how you guys do a great job of that.
That's good to hear, because I think that is something that we try and focus on, making it open and encouraging everyone to participate, because we're not the only creative people on the planet.
Oh, I guess you're right about that. That's pretty much all I have to say for on this end. Again, thank you, Christine and Mr. C, for taking your time out on Saturday night to do this. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you.